Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/book-versus-movie. There are over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Thanks so much.
Ja?
Guten Tag, Fräulein. Bin ich bei Schneider? Könnte ich Sie sprechen? Ich suche ein Zimmer.
Fräulein Schneider, nix zu Haus. Have you a cigarette, darling? I am desperate.
Yes. Yes, I think so.
Oh, fantastic.
You're American.
Oh, God, how depressing. You meant to think I'm an international woman of mystery. I've been working on it like mad.
I was told there might be a room to rent here. Not too expensive, I hope.
Divine decadence. I'm Sally Bowles.
I'm Brian Roberts.
Come in, Brian, darling. Oh, schön. English and cigarette. Oh, God, I've even begun to think of German.
How long have you been here?
Forever.
How long is that?
Almost 3 months. It's the most marvelous boarding house. Marvelous lodgers. Everybody's broke, of course, but who isn't these days? Now, there's Fräulein Meyer, who's a masseuse, for ladies only. And then there's Fräulein Kost, who's a terribly sweet street book.
Willkommen, bienvenue, welcome, hello to Book Versus Movie. This is a podcast where we read books, usually, that have been adapted into movies, and then we try to decide which we like better, the book or the movie. I am Margot P. of ColoniaBook.com, and this is my good friend and co-host, Margot D. of Brooklyn Fit Chick.
Bonjour, mes amis.
That we were just saying before we got on the air, whoa, this one has a lot of rabbit holes.
It's too many.
We'll try not to go too far on our tangents. But this is a lot. Today, we are going to be talking about Cabaret, the film Cabaret, which is an adaptation of the musical Cabaret, which is an adaptation of the play I Am a Camera, which is an adaptation of the novella Sally Bowles. So, but before we get into all of that, plus Nazis. There are a few places you might want to know about if you're new, where you can interact with us and other listeners of this podcast on the internet.
We put out a show every week while we're still in hibernation, whatever you want to call it. At this point, you know, we're all waiting for vaccinations. Yes. So we are always looking for suggestions. We decided to do musicals in March, and you guys were really great about sending us suggestions. So we're looking for suggestions. April, May, June. If you've got any ideas, we are on Facebook. We have a basic Facebook page. The best place on Facebook to interact with us is in our Facebook group, and it's a private group, and literally we just talk about books and movies there. That's it. So you just go to Facebook and type in Book vs Movie Podcast Group, ask to join. Come on in, join the fun. It's great. If you're on Twitter, we're at Book Versus and Movie. Just spell that out. We are on Instagram at Book Versus Movie. If you could please follow us, we're looking to build those numbers there. And we have a basic email, Book Versus Movie Podcast, spelled it all out, at gmail.com. And we just got a new logo a few weeks ago. So we have a stack of stickers. Margo, I need to send some to you. So if you would like some stickers,
yes,
drop
please.
Your address in the mail. Yep. And I will get them out in the mail to you.
Yeah. So we are continuing our weekly brand new episode. Margo, I don't know how you were doing this with all your other podcasts.
I know.
But,
trust me. But
one of the ways that we're able to do it is that, who was it in our – somebody in the Facebook group asked if we would do Hamilton, which I would love to do Hamilton. But the book is 818 pages. And because we're churning these out one a week, we are picking shorter literary sources. Sometimes it's a play. Sometimes it's a short story or a magazine article or a novella or a song even we've done. But today we are – like I just said it – to go. This one is is pretty much all the things. It's a song and a play and a musical and a book. It's all of the things. It's everything but a magazine article, and it might even have been that at some point. I just wanted to mention, I didn't believe that this was available as an audio. We're going to be talking about Christopher Isherwood's, which now you can find this novella in what's called Berlin Stories.
Which you read. This is normally
which we, I read.
Right. So normally what we do is we pick a source and then we read the source and then we see the adaptation. Then we talk about back and forth. There's so much going on here that Margot took on the book. I'm also named Margot, by the way, if you're, this is new for you.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. We're both Margos.
We're both Margos, and we're not experts. You'll find that out soon enough on literature or theater or movies. We're just fans and buffs and movie buffs, and we just wanted to read more, and we're friends. So we figured it's a great way for us to catch up with each other every week. And so Margot is going to be taking care of the novella, the short story. I will be talking about the play that was written in 1951, and then we'll both talk about the 1972 film from Bob Fosse. But there's going to be a lot of other discussion going on here because Sally Bowles is everywhere, I found.
Boy, she sure is. She really, really is. But it all starts with this novella, as I was saying, by Christopher Isherwood. I guess we'll start with him. Let's start with Mr. Isherwood.
Christopher William Bradshaw Isherwood, boy, is that English. He was born August 26, 1904 in Cheshire, England, and he eventually became an American citizen. When he's written many, many things. When he was very young, he realized he was homosexual. So he moved to Berlin in the early 1930s, late 20s. Actually, in the 20s, then into the early 30s, Berlin, it's hard to describe nowadays, but it was sort of this hot spot for sexuality, for arts, and expression. And it's hard to think of it now, but like transvestitism, nightclubs, all that was like very, very popular in Berlin.
The Bauhaus. Yeah, exactly. Just lots of stuff happening.
Which is shocking to think now, but it was all open. Everything was open. Everything was okay. People were sort of figuring their things out. Germany was getting out of a war, and that people were very poor. And this, when you have a lot of poverty, fascism can start. But anyway, Christopher Isherwood moves to Berlin to lead an openly homosexual lifestyle, among other things. He was a talented writer and a bon vivant. He becomes friends with a woman named Jean Ross. She's 20 years old and a very pretty girl from England. Very smart.
Yeah, I was going to say, so Jean Ross, and we'll post a photo of her. There's a really beautiful photograph of her right about the time that the novella takes place, mm-hmm. wearing the hat.
Mm-hmm. The beret.
In the hat. But she's... Putting aside everything that character has become in our Western culture, kind of a badass.
She's incredible. She is her own story. By the way, Olivia Wilde, the actress and director, she mm-hmm. is step-granddaughter of Jean Ross.
Yes.
So Jean had moved to Berlin for the same reasons that Christopher Isherwood did. And they became very good friends. And she was in a couple of musicals in England and on film. She wanted to get into movies, which was like still a new thing.
Very much.
Very much.
Yeah.
So she goes to Berlin, has a tough time fitting in. So she starts a cabaret act just to kind of put herself out there and make some money. She was starving. They're all starving when they're living there.
It's a lean time for sure.
That's why they had that lean silhouette. Like, exactly. She performs at a lesbian nightclub and mm-hmm. doesn't have a great singing voice, but she has a lot of presence and people are super attracted to her. And she has several affairs with men and women. She's in many different plays. Christopher Isherwood is like completely infatuated with her, but not romantically. He just thinks she's cool as shit. Basically, he thinks she's the bee's knees.
Wants to be your friend. She's reportedly the source of the inspiration of the song "These Foolish Things," mm-hmm. the cigarette that bears the lipstick's traces. That song, which I love. It was written by Eric Mashvitz, and his wife later was like, "No, that song was about me," and he's like, "Yeah, no."
No.
about Jean Ross. Beautiful, smart, witty, and from what I can tell, very political.
Yes.
Which Sally Bowles is not in the book or any of the things, not into politics. Jean Ross was super, super, super into politics. She could write. You know, she arguably was as good a writer as Christopher Isherwood. It was probably another reason why they were friends, I imagine.
And they do become very good friends. And she, so the Nazis take over Germany. People have to flee. So they take off to the winds. And Christopher Isherwood starts writing about his times in Berlin after Hitler takes over. And it's the late 30s at this point. And they are a series of short stories, and then he turns them into novellas. This character of Sally Bowles is featured, and the Sally Bowles he writes about is all those things. Has the charisma, you know, she's dying to be famous. She's, you know, all this thing is like she just wants to be famous and taken care of. This is not exactly Jean Ross. Jean Ross didn't want anybody to take care of her. She was a feminist, too.
No.
On top of everything.
Oh, she's very much a feminist. Absolutely. You know, after she left Berlin, she became a war correspondent and a journalist covering the Spanish Civil War alongside a young fellow by the name of Ernest Hemingway. Perhaps you've heard of him?
Yeah, I think
they were
have.
Colleagues.
Yes. And she would go off wherever there was, like she went to the Spanish Civil War. She protested against the Vietnam War. She had an affair with a man who turns out was already married. She had a kid with him, a daughter, Sarah, and then he left them when Sarah was just 3 or 4 months old, and then Jean just went on with her life and took care of her sister, and she raised her daughter, and her daughter went to Oxford. I mean, this incredible life story. So Christopher Isherwood is writing stories starting in the late 30s into the 40s. He becomes friends with a person named Truman Capote, who we've talked about before. Capote thought he was a great writer.
And Capote, of course he did.
I mean, he was cute, too. Let's just, you know.
He's very cute.
Yes, he's super handsome and British. I mean, come on. People say that that is part of the inspiration for Holly Golightly, which is... Yes, Breakfast at Tiffany's.
I mean, when you read Sally Bowles... But, okay, let's just be clear that Sally Bowles, the novella, is written in the 30s. Mm-hmm. Holly Golightly is written in the 50s. When I was reading this novella, that I was like, oh my God, this is Breakfast at Tiffany's. I'm reading Breakfast at Tiffany's in Berlin. It's the same. It's so similar in structure that I wonder that did Christopher Isherwood like think that Truman Capote had ripped him off?
There's no evidence of that.
It's that close.
But it is. I didn't read. So you read it. What did you think? What did you think of his writing?
I watched a lot of Isherwood interviews, but I read the novella that I read, and it has shown up, and they've done different editions. He wrote a lot of things when he was in Berlin and a lot of things about his time in Berlin. It's a very special time in world history, and he has a very interesting lens on it. So the edition that I read is a recent edition. It's all of it collected. It's called Berlin Stories. It has a wonderful, beautiful introduction by one of my favorite authors, Armistead Maupin, who wrote Tales of the City. I love Tales of the City. Huge part of my teen years. I love those books. So he writes a really gorgeous introduction. And then Isherwood's introduction is also very... He's older when he's written it. It must have been for a later edition of the books. And then you read Sally Bowles, which I believe was written in 1937. So it was already written after the Nazis are like in place when he writes this book. But he's writing it at the time, about the time right before that. And again, I mean, it's very Breakfast at Tiffany's. So you have Christopher Isherwood, and in the book, he's himself. He's Christopher. The character is Christopher Isherwood. It's a fictionalized version of himself, but it's him. And as you said, he comes, just like you said, he comes to Berlin. He's a writer. People know him as this English writer, you know, in this artist society's bohemian lifestyle. The social mores out the window. Everybody's scrabbling for money and food and exploring all kinds of stuff. And he meets this, you know, kind of shabby around the edges, but very fabulous young woman who's like 19, named Sally Bowles. And Sally, you know, doesn't care about what people think about her. And she goes from man to man. And you know, doesn't have time to worry about people's expectations of her. And yeah, he goes and sees her sing in this cabaret. It's not a lesbian cabaret in the book. It's mm-hmm. I don't think it's although there is mention of lesbianism and all that kind of stuff. But he goes and sees her perform in the cabaret, and he says in the book, he says that she's not a good singer, but she has this kind of deep, husky voice, but that she's very captivating. And she's got this cabaret act that you shouldn't be enjoying, but you can't help but enjoy it. She's just so thrilling to watch. And they become very good friends. There's this other friend, Fritz, like he's in the book. Mm-hmm. So that storyline is in the book. The storyline about Fritz and the wealthy Jewish heiress. And then you find out that Fritz falls in love with her, and he turns out he's Jewish too, and he's been hiding it. That's in the book. And then there's also in the book, the character's name is Clive. If you know the movie Cabaret, the character is Max. So Clive, and I think Clive is English in the book, if I'm remembering correctly. And he is, I mean, he's just out for a good time. He's a rich guy who's slumming it and is throwing money around, and he's basically bought the friendship of these two friends, Sally and Christopher, and they are both sleeping with him. And he tells them like he's going to whisk them away to, I forget where he says, someplace exotic like South America. I think it's like Argentina or something. And then he just splits town and leaves them like $100 each. Sally, in the book, Sally finds out that she's pregnant. So then they have to use the little bit of money that Clive has left them so that she can get an abortion. Christopher takes her to get the abortion. It's never even a question, I don't think, of her keeping the baby that I recall. They're like, we need to deal with this. Like, we can't possibly have a baby. That's not going to be any good. But in order even to, and I'm not sure, and I wasn't really clear, like, if it was legal or not legal, or if it was a little nebulous to me in the book, because Christopher had to pretend to be the father of the baby so that Sally could get the abortion.
Yes, and he was being scolded for it, was he?
Yes. Okay. Yes. And she has some complications, as I recall. She's ill afterwards, and then he kind of helps nurse her back to health. And then they part ways, you know. So they've bonded. They've like seriously bonded. But like sometimes happens in your youth, you have these moments with these people and then you part ways and you kind of don't hear from them again. She goes off, you know, they know they have to get out of Dodge because the Nazis are coming. Mm-hmm. And so I think he goes back to England. She, as I said, goes off to be a communist war correspondent mm-hmm. In Spain. And they kind of, you know, he kind of doesn't hear from her after that. Very Breakfast at Tiffany's. He gets an occasional postcard from her. There was something else I was going to say about Jean. Oh, so a lot of this is taken from their real life. Jean really did get pregnant. Jean really did have an abortion. Christopher helped her with it. I can't imagine, you know, if they went through that and that they parted ways, I can't imagine that she was delighted that he would share that with the whole freaking world. So we'll get to like what she thought about Sally Bowles in a minute. But anyway, that is how the book ends. It's just this like intense friendship in this intense place and time. And then everybody gets scattered to the winds because the Nazis are coming and he doesn't really know what happened to her, which I don't know if that's true or not. I kind of think he kind of knew what happened to her. But in the book, you know, for the purposes of the novella, he's like, mm-hmm. I don't know where she is. Once in a while, I get a postcard saying we're going to meet up and we never do, basically. And that's the book.
So that's the basis for a play. Isherwood becomes pretty successful after that. And then there's a writer named John Van Druten. He wrote the play I Am a Camera because it's one of the things that his character, Christopher Isherwood, says is, I am a camera with its shutter open, quite passive, recording, not thinking. So it's just him looking out and what's happening. So I'm going to play...
Right.
The trailer right now for the movie, and just
if I'm the camera,
I am the camera.
Oh, cool.
Everything we just said about Sally Bowles, just listen to her now in this trailer.
Yes, I am a camera. My eyes, the lens through which I see the world in close-up. Storing away for my business and your pleasure, the experience and excitement of meeting people. All kinds of people. People like Sally Bowles.
Why do you paint your fingernails green, for example?
To attract men.
Brash, brazen, outrageous Sally, whom I first saw singing in one of those third-rate nightclubs of wild and wanton Berlin in the early 30s.
The sort of place where love affairs begin. I can't forget him. I never met him. I only saw him in a cafe in Berlin.
I got to know her very well.
I've been most divinely chaste.
How can I ever really explain about Sally? This girl who knows no shame and lives as her heart dictates. Through her, I learnt a lot. A lot about some kind of women. And quite a lot about myself.
A Puritan all of a sudden.
If you like.
Just where I'm concerned.
Oh, by the way, my name is Christopher Isherwood. I'm a writer, always looking for new experiences. And I found them with Sally and her bohemian friends. Some of them were different. Natalia, for instance. She was innocent, very innocent, and very rich. But for a real character, dollar-rich Clive Mortimer was the one.
Oh, well, I never say no to a drink. But the next one's on me.
Oh, no, we couldn't think of it. Well, unless you insist.
Any mess you get into, you try and get out of by using your extremely inadequate sex appeal.
My sex appeal inadequate? It's adequate.
Inadequate.
Adequate.
I got the play, and you can get it for yourselves. It's in paperback. I thought it was so dry and so not exciting. I think
I know
really great material, and it's pretty close to the movie itself. It stars Julie Harris as Sally Bowles, and John Van Druten makes a point, one, of saying that it's very important for Sally not to be pretty, and goes on and on about how Julie Harris isn't technically pretty, but she's good for the part. And then goes on and on to say the key part about Sally is that she's a girl. She's a little girl that's just off in the world on her own, and she's desperate and she's scared, and she just wants to be an actress.
Barf.
Barf. It's such barf compared to the real world.
I wondered about that. I was so curious about it. I'm so glad you said that, because I was watching the movie. And I should say, too, I saw an interview with Christopher Isherwood talking about this play, not Cabaret. I saw lots of things about Cabaret, but specifically about this play. He seemed to say that he liked it, as I recall, that he liked the play, and that he Now, Julie Harris, we just mentioned her in the last, just coincidentally, and he said that he loved her as Jean Ross, as Sally Bowles, and that when he saw her for the first time with the hat and everything, he said something like, how is it that I've aged so much and you haven't aged at all, as though she were, you know, that woman. And again, as I just said a minute ago, Jean Ross, stunning, stunning woman. She's beautiful. And Jean Harris is no slouch either. What the hell?
Well, so Jean Harris has, I think she's Irish. She has like light hair, like reddish blonde, and she has very fair skin. Jean Ross, I think she was part Iranian. She had she has jet black hair, dark eyes, very angular features. She was a model in Berlin too, when she wasn't doing the 10 other things that she does. But so we have Julie Harris, and she just plays her. And this is about 10 years before Breakfast at Tiffany's is a movie. This play hits New York, and it actually caused a stir, because they mention abortion. They mention the Nazis. They mention sex, but it's so watered down that none of her intelligence is there at all. She's just attitude. Right.
You know, she's this ditzy little thing that just flits from, she's just out like manhunting all the time and doesn't have the sense to do anything on her own. And it's, I didn't like her character at all. I love Julie Harris and she's acting. It's not her acting. It's the character and the direction.
The writing and the direction are terrible.
Yeah.
She's a light in there, but everything else, it's Shelley Winters is in this movie and she does a terrible German accent.
So bad. It's
horrifying. I mean, there's a scene where she's singing, where Julie Harris is singing, but it's obviously dubbed and it's obvious like she doesn't know the song. It's really awkward. I mean, you could, we have it up on our Facebook group. You can find it on YouTube.
It's easy to find. Yeah.
Very easy to find, but it's just, she's not political at all. They never mention politics. They never mention like,
there's one little moment. Yeah. There's like one little moment where, what's his name? Christopher. I think his name is Christopher Isherwood in the play, right?
Yes.
Where he comes across some Nazis and they offer him a pamphlet and he's like, I want your pamphlet. He gets in a fight with the Nazis. But it's not, you don't get a sense, or at least I didn't at all in watching the film. And I'm saying I did not read the play, okay? But just in watching the film version of that play, I did not have at any moment the sense of poverty, of the decadence, you know, that, you know, when you're in these kind of dire straits, the impending Nazis are coming and all the other factions that were going swirling around at that time. It was neither like, there are no, it was just, it's very wooden. And I can only think it's because, which the book is not at all. The book is exciting. And you always have this like sense of tension of like, get out of Berlin. But the movie just doesn't, I don't know if it's because it's so tiptoeing away from the, you know, homosexuality or abortion or, oh, well, let's talk about that. There's no, okay. Now it's time for Margot's feminist rant. So, I mean, I liked in the book that I liked that it's, you know, it's again, I didn't know when I read the book that that whole story about the abortion that had really happened. Had I known that, I probably would have had a different reaction to it when I on my first read of it. But I felt like in the book, he handles it very realistically, you know, the things that you would think about, the things that you would be concerned with and all of that. In the movie, she's pregnant and he's like, oh, we'll get married. And, you know, cause that's what you do. And then it's rather than her getting an abortion, turns out, cause she's a girl, you know, math is so hard when you're a girl. She just miscounted. She wasn't pregnant. She was just trying to do math. Oh, gosh.
There's moments where they hint at things that, like, there's one point where you see, you don't realize, it's basically a sex worker who's walking around Berlin at night, and she shows up and she's wearing these black boots, and like they pan the boots and then come up to her face, because that used to be, I think, was for transvestites, or no, it was for BDSM, like people who were into kink. They would know to look for that kind of a person. Like, there's hints of it here and there, apparently, but mostly it's Julie Harris. And what is she making? The thing with the eggs with the Worcestershire sauce.
The oh my goodness. That's so disgusting. Prairie oysters,
which sounds
so disgusting. Prairie oysters, I mean, and that's a real thing. Yep. It's a hangover cure. She goes on and on and on about these freaking prairie oysters.
She's dancing around the apartment all the time. She's just, it's that
pixie, no music.
Manic pixie.
There's no music.
Girl. Like, she's doing that. And it's irritating. And it's hardly, what's his face? Was her, who plays her husband?
From Manchurian Candidate.
Yes. And it's just, it's, I mean, anyway, that's, I had to play the clip for you guys because you won't believe it. Like, that's Sally Bowles.
It's bananas.
It's completely bananas. So let's leave that behind. So that's the play. And it did win a bunch of awards.
It was a bit of a hit.
It was.
enough that they made a movie out of it.
Well, so John Van Druten, he wrote the book for that. He then had the right. So when the Cabaret, the musical, was going to be made, somebody said, we need to put music to this. And then they got really great people. They had John Kander and Fred Ebb, who are like, they're also from Chicago. Like, they're really good at putting that together. They had to pay off the estate for John Van Druten. And so his ex-lover and his family inherited that, which they got like 1% of the profits, like in 72, like amazing windfall of money. But they took that basic story from the play, and I don't know why they didn't just get it from Christopher Isherwood, but they didn't. And some of this is Isherwood, but then they have John Masteroff, and he writes the Cabaret musical. And now we're going to talk more about sex, and we're going to talk more about what's really going on in Berlin. And Sally Bowles is not a good singer. Sally Bowles is just struggling to make it. And in order to make it more interesting to the audience is that they set it in a nightclub called the Kit Kat Club. And they have an MC. And the MC for Broadway and then for the movie was Joel Grey, Jennifer Grey's father, in case you didn't know that. And the Cabaret music.
I understand he put her in the corner that one time.
I've never seen the movie.
You've never seen that movie?
Never seen Dirty Dancing.
That's hilarious.
I've seen bits of it. I know what it is, but it just, whatever. Anyway, so it's set in the same time, 1931-ish. And it's Jill Haworth is our Sally Bowles, and Bert Convy is in there.
About Bert Convy.
The thing was, is that when you showed up, it was the Kit Kat Club. And it's like Cats, like Margot was describing a couple weeks ago.
Right. When you walk into the theater,
right,
it's like you're walking into the nightclub.
Exactly. And so they have people kind of flirting with you. And it was just a whole experience. And it was a ton of songs. And they're great songs. I mean, there's a lot of music here. Bob Fosse was not a part of the choreography with this one. Because he had like a million things he was choreographing at the time. But this was the musical. It's a smash that wins all the Tonys. And we had on our Facebook group, we have a Joel Grey in 1967 introducing. And it's so adorable when they have the band come out. It's so innocent compared to what happens in other versions.
It's true. Yeah. But you can see the seeds of it there, at least.
Yeah. I mean, it was kind of racy for the time.
Mm-hmm.
So now let's go to Bob Fosse. And we should say, I watched again. It's on Hulu in America. It might be on Amazon where you live. You can see Fosse and Verdon. And it's a show about Bob Fosse and Gwen Verdon. And they talk about just different Sweet Charity. They talk about this. They talk about Chicago. And they illustrate the idea of how their partnership worked. Cabaret was one of those movies. Bob did it because he was going through a slump. He had directed Sweet Charity, which came out in 1969, which I'm shocked when I see that. The 60s were a crazy time for movies. It was just
seriously. Yeah, no kidding.
And Bob Fosse is an amazing choreographer. Words fail me when I try to talk about him.
Yeah. I mean, nobody, it doesn't look like anything else. Like Sweet Charity, it just doesn't look like anything else. You look at any other musical that you've ever seen up to that point, and it's like, what? How? Why are you moving like that? And why can't I look away? It's so captivating.
Well, let's play the trailer right now. So this is the trailer. It's 1972, and Liza Minnelli is our Sally Bowles. And then Michael York plays, they changed Christopher Isherwood to Brian Roberts, which is about, I always think like sounds like a name, but okay. And they have Joel Grey. So here, let's play that trailer now.
This was Germany in the early 30s.
Hello, stranger.
Full of life and love.
Meine Damen und Herren, Mesdames et Messieurs, Ladies und Gentlemen, Fräulein Sally Bowles.
This was Sally Bowles in the early 30s.
Well, I dash all day and I work late at the cabaret.
Full of life.
I love parties. Doesn't my body drive you wild with desire?
And love.
Oh, Brad.
A special girl.
I'm going to be a great film star. That is, if booze and sex don't get me first.
On the brink of something fantastic.
I mean, it would be funny, wouldn't it, if he asked me to become the next Baroness von Hoyne in Regensburg?
And frightening.
I'm Sally Bowles.
I'm Brian Roberts.
And I have this strange, mystical, faddish feeling about you. So you're moving right in, okay? Okay? Have you ever slept with a dwarf?
Once, but it wasn't a lasting relationship.
Do you sleep with girls or don't you?
Sally, you don't ask questions like that.
I do. The poor man. He tries to love me. I may have my tiny faults. God damn it, I'm gonna have a baby!
Sally is rather knowledgeable in these areas.
Does it really matter as long as you're having fun? What good is sitting all alone in your room? Come, hear the music play. Life is a cabaret, old chum. Come to the cabaret. Start by admitting from cradle to tomb, it isn't that long a stay. Life is a cabaret, old chum. It's only a cabaret, old chum. And I love Cabaret.
So what do you think of this movie? Like, when I just saw this again for the first time in many, many years the other night, I'm interested what you think.
I hadn't seen it in a very long time. Have you ever seen it on the stage?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I saw. Yes. I'll talk about that. Yeah.
I've only seen it like in a regional production on the stage. We should say Judi Dench was the London Sally Bowles.
Mm-hmm.
And I found a video somewhere. I'll try to dig it up and put it in the Facebook group. I haven't seen this in a very long time. I saw it when I was a kid and it scared me to death.
Same.
It really frightened me. It's very dark. The look. It's everything's dark and dingy and Nazis. Yeah, it really, really, really scared me. And there is what I love about it as an adult. There is from the very opening frame to the end, there is this like impending darkness that is always slowly, almost imperceptibly encroaching through the whole thing. It has so much tension. You know, even in all of the revelry of the cabaret and, you know, the bawdiness and all of that, there's a grimy darkness to it, which as an adult I think is so cool about it. I think it's really great. You know, like when she does her first song. Oh, and we should all say this, so now Sally can sing.
Mm-hmm.
Why Sally isn't making it as an international sensation because is beyond me, because she's blowing the roof off the joint every night. But when she sings Mein Herr, mm-hmm. all and the dancers are amazing in this movie, and the cabaret dancers are on the chairs. You know,
yep.
Those chairs just look so dirty. They just look so like sticky. You know, and just the whole tone of it is so cool. Everything's so shabby, like it would have been. That's really a lot the picture that Christopher Isherwood paints of Berlin in the stories. I think I saw an interview where he said he didn't like. He went to see the stage musical of Cabaret, which he did not like. But that he did like the film.
Meine Damen und Herren!
Meine Damen und Herren, Mesdames et Messieurs, Ladies und Gentlemen!
But now,
forget that club.
Is proud
very beautiful young lady.
She's so beautiful!
Wo kann Wo?
Charming, I have only yesterday said, I want you for my wife. And she said,
Your wife, what would she want with me?
She want with me. I give you the international sensation, Fräulein Zellibold!
Have to understand the way I am, mein Herr. A tiger is a tiger, not a lamb, mein Herr. You'll never turn the vinegar to jam, mein Herr. So I do what I do. When I'm through, then I'm through, and I'm through. Toodaloo. Bye, bye, my. Farewell, my liebe Herr. It was a fine affair, but now it's over. And though I used to care, I need the open air. You're better off without me, mein Herr. Don't dab your eye, mein Herr, or wonder why, mein Herr. I've always said that I was a rover. You mustn't knit your brow, you should have known by now. You've every cause to doubt me, mein Herr.
It seems grittier than that 1960. I haven't seen the full show from then. Obviously, I wasn't born yet, but I also, I couldn't dig up like a full, of course, now someone's going to find it for me easily. But anyway, yes, Fosse's doing something very, like you said, grimy and gritty and different than the way musicals had been done before. There's lots of close-ups. This one for best editing. And once again, yeah, I bet. Like editing
it's
all that.
Amazing editing. Oh, it's so well edited. Yes, it is.
And it's sort of like, what do you do? I'm sorry. Like, what do you do when you have somebody as great as Liza Minnelli? You want her to sing. You want her to dance. You want her to.
Of course you do.
Like, why on hell would you not do that? I mean, and she's amazing. And then, but that is
incandescent. Incandescent. She is just glowing every time she shows up. I mean, you just can't look. She's so riveting. Yes. Her eyes and the skin and the hair and the feathers.
Green nails. They stuck with that. That's always
the green nails. Yeah.
Green nail polish. Michael York is really good. He's so young and handsome.
He is.
And Joel Grey really ups the weirdness as the MC.
Willkommen, bienvenue, welcome, fremde, étranger, stranger. Glücklich zu sehen, just wie enchanté. Happy to see you, bleibe reste stehen. Willkommen, bienvenue, welcome im Cabaret, au Cabaret, to Cabaret. Meine Damen und Herren, Mesdames et Messieurs, Ladies und Gentlemen, comment ça va? Do you feel good? Ich bin euer Konferencier. I am your host und sage willkommen, bienvenue. Welcome im Cabaret, au Cabaret, au Cabaret.
So Marissa Berenson's in this movie and she looks incredible.
Gorgeous.
Oh my God. I think I forgot, like, supposedly in the 30s, women did shave their eyebrows off and then painted thin, thin eyebrows in. And then that became a look in the early 70s, which is the worst thing to do ever. Don't do that.
It's so weird looking. Don't do that.
Because they don't always grow back.
And also when you would see it in Cabaret or Bonnie and Clyde or, you know, any place where you saw where they did that, those women were not painting on their own eyebrows. Not everybody is a makeup artist or has access to one. So if you shave your eyebrows, and think you're going to be painting on Marissa Berenson's eyebrows in Cabaret, good luck, sister.
Right, right. Part of, for me, this was the problem that Jean Ross had with it, is that she's like, she's way too good of a singer. Like, people would be packing the rafters to see this woman, and she's way too glamorous. Like, the clothes are too glamorous. They never, like, they could never afford those places to eat or hang out. Like, you never feel like they're afraid. And because in real life, they were terrified of starving to death. Seriously. They would, because that was always being threatened with that. So on the one hand, it's grimier, but on the other hand, it's glossier. It's hard. This is another thing for me. I wrote this down. He also directed All That Jazz. He directed Lenny, which is the worst movie ever, about Lenny Bruce. I just can't stand
it. I have not seen that. Is it not? It doesn't look good.
And then he directed Liza with a Z, which was Liza's big TV comeback in like 74, 75.
I do love Liza with a Z.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And then I saw on Broadway, there was a show called Fosse, which was directed by Anne.
Yeah, that's right.
And I went with my friend Ron. Afterwards, I said, so what do you think of this? And he's like, it gets very repetitive. The dance movements, like his style, it gets really
I think if you were watching it back to back to back to back, numbers, because if I remember, Fosse was like numbers from all the different shows, right? Mm-hmm. I think it doesn't, you need to have the context of the original show, I feel.
Oh, absolutely. And also, I mean, I just say, like, for me, like, there's no joy here. It's just all about technique. And I get it, because it's Nazis. We don't want it to be a laugh riot. But for me, there's a certain kind of joy that's missing.
I agree.
Okay. I don't want to sound like a lunatic, but but that's the movie. Songs are great. And the dancing and those routines are, like Margot said, incredible. And then there's a whole thing where he sings to a gorilla, Joel.
Right.
And supposedly Gwen Verdon didn't like any of the gorilla suits. They filmed this in Berlin. That's why it really feels real. And so she flew to New York to find a gorilla suit and then flew it back to Berlin in like 3 days. And she's the one who really helped him with the dancers and really helped him. Like, she's the one who got the little halter top outfit for Liza Minnelli. So Gwen Verdon is like somebody who's, you know, really should have been mentioned in the credits, because she really quite a bit here. Bob Fosse was a bit of an egomaniac, like to take credit for things. He put everything into it, by the way. I mean, that should be stated. I mean, he was a perfectionist, though. I'm not a perfectionist, so I don't understand that, but he was a perfectionist. And then that's why, like, that first routine when she's singing Mein Air and the women are on the chairs and every moment, every movement that they're doing is so precise and so amazing. Like, it's like I said, she would be the biggest star ever if this was what she was putting on every night. But they won. I'll just go real quick. He won for Best Director. It was the same year as Godfather, which also got a lot of nominations. Bob Fosse won for Best Director, Best Cinematography, Best Sound, Editing, Music. Liza Minnelli won for Best Actress, and Joel Grey won for Best Supporting Actor.
I think the directing is so good in this movie. And I don't know that much. I mean, I watched the Fosse Verdon thing, and I guess I've seen all the movies, but I'm not, like, as I said before, like, I'm not like a musical person. Mm-hmm. I don't know that much about Bob Fosse apart from those things. But what I really thought was really impressed me about this movie in terms of the directing, he did such an interesting, I loved all of his choices about when to be close up on people and when to be far away, how much to have in the shot, what not to have in the shot. I think it's really interesting, a lot of the dance numbers, the parts of the dance that are not in the frame versus the parts that are, and when and how. And you can see how much thought goes into it. And again, this movie does not let up from the very, very, very opening when you see the distorted, like, what am I looking at? What, you know, the reflection, that sense of doom through the whole thing. That's a hard thing to keep going without, you know, exhausting the audience or letting it drop, or, you know, it's every time you think it's going to start to go light, there are these like little tableau moments when the guy was killed in the street and the people are frozen standing around, or the, oh my gosh, that boy singing, the boy singing. Oh, chilling.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's the Nazism.
Yes.
That's in the story as well.
Chilling, as Nazis are.
Yes. That's as they're meant to be.
It's so well done. It's so, you're on the edge of your seat through the whole thing. And then, by the way, Liza Minnelli, just Liza Minnelli coming in, blowing the roof off the joint.
Well, so this is what's really interesting to me. And I put together a few Sally clips, if that's okay for you guys. And I want to just give you like an idea of just, so after this movie comes out, 1993, director Sam Mendes directs a London production. Now we have Alan Cumming as our MC, and then they really sex it up. And he's got the tattoos and he's like super actual. Costumes are changing. And it was a woman named Jane Horrocks. She sings Sally Bowles. And at the end for her, because when Sally's sings Life is a Cabaret, she's getting the hell out of Dodge because the Nazis are basically coming down the street. Like the whole point is like everybody's just trying to like put on a show to entertain the SS because the brown shirts would come in and watch the shows. And so she's trying to do that. And so Jane does a version where she's screaming at the end because she's so upset. So my big regret in life in 1999, my friend Jackie, who listens to the show and she's a supporter on Patreon, she had a dinner and movie thing for her birthday. I'm sorry, dinner and a theater thing for her birthday. And I could only afford to do one because I was broke. I was working in book publishing. And so I just went to dinner and then they went to see Cabaret with Natasha Richardson as the lead. And it's my big regret in life because I would have loved to have seen her. And they were just saying like what a great performance it was. And it was just phenomenal. But I did get to see it in 2014, and it was with Michelle Williams, who played Gwen Verdon and Fosse Verdon. So anyway, so these are the various Sally clips.
Miss Jill Howard.
Ding on the book and the broom. It's time for a holiday. My key is a cabaret, old chum. Come to the cabaret. And as for me, as for me.
Hear the music play. Life is a cabaret, old chum. Come to the cabaret. The book and the broom. It's time for a holiday. Life is a cabaret, old chum. Come to the cabaret.
A girlfriend known as Elsie, with whom I shared four sordid rooms in Chelsea. She wasn't what you'd call a blushing flower. As a matter of fact, she rented by the hour. The day she died, the neighbors came to snicker. Well, that's what comes from too much pills and liquor. But when I saw her laid out like a queen, she was the happiest corpse I'd ever seen. I think of Elsie to this very day. I remember how she turned to me and say, what good is sitting alone in your room? Come here.
And as for me, I made my mind.
So, Margot, after doing all of this research, book or movie?
Oh, man. They're so different. I would encourage people to read Sally Bowles. It's well written. It's not, and learn about Jean Ross.
Yeah.
Fascinating character. Especially if you love Breakfast at Tiffany's, you'll be like, Truman Capote ripped this guy off.
Right.
But the movie is very good.
Yeah.
The movie's super good. And I appreciate, you know, like bringing the abortion back into the story in what I felt was a very realistic way. And the, you know, dealing with the political themes and dealing, I thought that the, oddly, of all of the things that we've talked about that went between the book and this movie, that this movie is the thing that's truest to the themes in the book, definitely more so than I Am a Camera. So I guess I would give it to the movie. It holds up. It holds up. And I think it's still, like the book, it has a lot to teach us about lots of things, politics and sexuality and gender roles and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, so I would give a slight edge to the movie just because the design is so awesome and the direction is so brilliant, so multi-layered. And then, of course, the dance. And yeah, it's great. I really, really, really liked it.
You know, it's only a 20-year difference between I Am a Camera, the play, and this movie, but the world changes so completely in 20 years.
Seriously? Because really?
I was thinking, when I was giggling in a weird way because you were talking about the abortion scene, because in I Am a Camera, Julie Harris says, I think I'm pregnant. I think I'm going to have a baby. And then the next day, her apartment is filled with baby stuff.
Oh, that's right. Like, I forgot about that. That's right. I forgot. So yeah, like literally silly. The next scene, she has like baby clothes and baby shoes and all the baby thing. I forgot about that.
Oh my God. This is much grittier and it's streaming everywhere. You could see it for yourselves. Jean Ross, I don't know if she didn't like the play or she didn't like the musical that came out in the 60s. I don't know if she ever got to see the movie. She died in 1973. So it's like a year after it came out. He didn't identify her for a really long time, but somebody figured it out that it had to be her. That was the inspiration for Sally. And it really went against her principles. And I would love to see, imagine if he actually featured the real person more and more of her characteristics.
Yeah. The one thing is that, like, I can't imagine. I find it completely implausible that Jean Ross and Christopher Isherwood didn't connect and communicate and have a big part of their relationship around writing. She was a writer. And Sally is not. Sally's a cabaret singer who wants to be an actress. And that's not what Jean Ross was at all. She was a writer, and she was very, very political, much more than Christopher Isherwood was. But for the story, it works, you know. But at the same time, you know, I wonder why we couldn't have this badass lady writer.
I think we're still waiting for that Sally Bowles. I mean, Liza, for sure, is amazing. And all these women that played her are amazing. But I think it could even take another reboot.
Mm-hmm. It's great. It's really good.
We did it, Margo.
Now, I know. We have time for one more musical, I think.
Yeah, if we get it in. Was there one that was on you wanted to do?
Not in particular that we didn't do. I kind of wanted to do Gypsy, but that's very difficult to get that book.
Yeah. Or we could just do another play.
Yeah, we could just do another play one.
I was thinking of The Women.
Oh, The Women. Yeah. I love The Women. Didn't they make a musical of The Women?
I'm sure they did. We'll find out. Yeah, I got to see that on Broadway.
Did you with Rue McClanahan?
All those people. Yeah, Cynthia Nixon.
Oh, man. Cynthia Nixon.
I'm looking at my stage bill right now. Yeah, it's a great movie, too.
I love this movie. I've never read the play. Oh, actually, no, I have read the play. Remember, was it Nora Ephron? Who was the one that did the... Diane English did it in 2008, remember, with Jada Pinkett and Meg Ryan and... It was not very good. No, I didn't care for it. Trying to see a musical film. Here we go. 1956, the story was made into a musical film titled The Opposite Sex, starring June Allison and Joan Collins.
Oh my God.
In 1956. I wonder who played who.
I was thinking, though, let's just do a play. Let's just do the women because we've had.
Yeah, let's do the women. That'd be fun because that movie is awesome.
This because my birthday's on the 29th and I don't know if I'm going to have time. So.
Oh, I know you'll be busy celebrating.
I'll be busy celebrating. So let's do the women. We'll do the stage and then there's the famous movie with all the people in it, all the great women in it.
I love that movie. And no boys.
It has no men. I looked at this. You know, they tell you in the back of the script, it says like 3M, 4W. That means three men, four women. For the women, it says 45 women.
Does it really?
Yep.
Yeah, I'm excited to learn about it. I don't know that much about the background of it. So that'll be fun.
Yeah, so we'll do that next time. And you guys, if you want to support the show, join our Patreon page. Go to patreon.com, look up Book VS Movie Podcast. All of our older episodes are there, and we're putting up new stuff all the time. If you have a few minutes, if you can leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts, that would be great, especially in iTunes. That really helps us find our people. And we also have an Audible connection. Go to audibletrial.com/book-versus-movie, and you can get a free month of their service. And once again, also find us on the socials or send us an email, bookversusmoviepodcast@gmail.com, if you would like some stickers and or you have suggestions for books and movies for us to cover in the future. And Margo, where can they find you?
You can find me online at coloniabook.com, and all of my social media callouts are at She's Nacho Mama. And where can they find you?
You can find me on social media at Brooklyn Fitchick, mostly for Twitter and Instagram. And my blog is brooklynfitchick.com. And we will be back soon with a new episode. Thank you so much for listening to the Book Versus Movie Podcast. We're a part of the Electronic Media Collective, and we follow the hashtags Podern Family and Lady Pod Squad. You can find us on social media at Book Versus a Movie. You just spelled it all out for Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You can send us an email at bookversusmoviepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to join our Facebook group, look for us under Book VS Movie Podcast Group in Facebook. Ask to join, and you may be lucky enough to get in. We also have a Patreon page if you want to support the show. Go to patreon.com and look for Book VS Movie Podcast. We record the show with our handy H6N, donated by those of you who were nice enough to contribute to the Patreon page. Thanks so much, and we'll be back soon with a new episode.
Do you feel good? Yeah, I bet you do. Ich bin euer Konferenzjahr, je suis votre compère. I am your host, und sage willkommen, bienvenue, welcome. Im Cabaret, au Cabaret, du Cabaret. And now, presenting the Cabaret Girls. Rosie, Lulu, Frenchie, Texas, Fritzy, and Helga. Each and everyone. A virgin. You don't believe me, huh? Well, don't take my word for it. Go ahead, try Helga. Outside it is winter, but in here it's so hot. Oof! Every night we have to battle with the girls to keep them from taking off all of their clothing. So don't go away. Who knows, tonight we may lose the battle.